Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a debate between the two candidates for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District. The participants are incumbent Republican Lee Terry, seeking his 9th term in Congress, and his Democrat challenger, Nebraska State Senator Brad Ashford. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha and Cox Communications, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 16, 2014, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the candidates and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Gary Kerr, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary Kerr, chairman of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee. Each month we sponsor a noon forum on a variety of subjects, forums that are open to the public. Today our forum is a debate between Republican Lee Terry and Democrat Brad Ashford, who are vying for the Omaha area congressional seat that will be decided in the November election. A debate sponsored by the Omaha Press Club, the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha, and Cox Communications, which is recording the debate to make it available to its subscribers. The questions have been prepared by a committee of the Press Club and League of Women Voters members. The candidates have not seen the questions in advance. Each candidate will get 1 minute and 30 seconds to respond to each question and 30 seconds worth of rebuttal time. Please no applause, shouting, and hollering during the debate, but you can do that right now as we invite Lee Terry and Brad Ashford to come forward. All right, questions. How much do television political ads influence the outcome of elections? We don't know, but two of them, attack ads, are running over and over and over again, and the belief they very well could make the difference in what is believed to be a very close race. To the extent that they could make a difference in voters' minds, we want each of the candidates to defend the attack ad their campaign has mounted against their opponent. Even though these first two are directed questions, each of you will get a full complement of time to discuss each one. So Brad Ashford, we begin with you. The ad supporting your campaign lambasted Terry for initially saying he would continue to take his pay during a government shutdown, and then asserts that 16 years, his time in office, is enough. Defend that TV advertisement.
Congress is broken. It's very, very broken. When the members of Congress are in session for only 92 days out of the year and cannot make the tough decisions on the big issues that we face, my view is that we need a change. My view is we need a change, and that it seems to me that when we pass a budget without that sort of laser-like approach that is necessary to go line by line by line and determine what priorities that we should have, that, to me, creates uncertainty in the country, and that needs to change. So after 16 years, I think we do need a change. We need a change in Congress. We need a new Congress. We need to move forward collaboratively, working across the aisle. My pledge is I'm going to find 25 friends the day I get there to work across the aisle and to find new solutions. Positions are not solutions. Political posturing is not a solution. Shutting the government down is not a solution.
Lee Terry, you also have a minute 30.
Thank you. I want to thank the League of Women Voters first for having this debate and Press Club hosting this debate. I think that's really an important part of our democracy, and I appreciate that. The issue in the ad that I'm running is about leadership and making our communities safer. The reality is, in February of 2013, our police department became so frustrated that violent criminals being released, that they even asked for a hearing. And this 16-year state senator held a hearing. And the city testified, Mayor Suttle testified back then, The police chief testified that criminals are being released early. But yet just a few months ago, Senator Ashford said that no one has ever told him that there was a problem occurring. Then in the summer, there was a streak of horrible violence. That should have told him there's a problem. But yet in the next legislative session of 2014, when the public was crying for reforms of the good time law, and several bills were introduced, none of them got out of his committee. He purposely bottled them up when there's a legislative need needed to change good time law. He should have stepped up and shown leadership.
Brad Ashford, you've got 30 seconds.
The World Herald, I think, mentioned this in their editorial, Lee, last weekend, that nobody has a better record on public safety than I do. We have passed tough laws on sentencing. I was the one that called the hearing in February. We had a hearing on the furlough issue. We brought together the police department at the request of the city, and we came up with a solution. That's what we've done. And since February of last year, we have worked continuously on prison reform, and we passed in the legislature, with the signature of the governor, prison reform legislation without any no votes.
Lee Terry, you have 30 seconds.
But yet you didn't do any of the necessary reforms to good time. You co-sponsored and worked with Brenda Council's LB 121 that reduced 129. The giving gang criminals an extra 3 days off per month of their minimum sentence. You criticized the Adam Walsh bill that I supported and voted for in Congress. You said that it wasn't worth it. Well, the Adam Walsh bill is the one that keeps a registry of child molesters. I don't think that's a record of public safety.
All right, we're going to continue on. The Affordable Care Act, which parts, if any, do you think should be repealed and what parts should be kept, Lee Terry?
Well, health care is an extremely important issue, it's for everybody and our employers. There were two promises that were made to the public. One is it was going to reduce your health care costs by $2,500. And we are going to cover people that hadn't been covered before. Those turned out to be both false. The reality is there are some people that have gotten coverage when they didn't have before. But I've also run into a lot of people that said because the cost of health care has gone up so much that they now don't qualify for the credits but yet can't afford the insurance. And what we've done is really encroached into our middle class where they can't afford health care today. Both of those promises turned out to be not true. I think what we need to do here is just pull this up by the roots because it's so embedded in letting bureaucrats make decisions on your health care instead of doctors and physicians doing it with their patients. So we should keep pre-existing conditions have to be covered. We have to make sure that families have the opportunity to continue their coverage. I love the fact that there's medical homes in here where there will be physicians that will be in charge of the care, particularly of those that have multiple chronic diseases. All the studies that I've read have shown that by properly managing the care, you can reduce the overall health cares by as much as 30%.
Brad Ashford, you got a minute 30.
Lee, this is the problem with Congress. This bill passed in 2010. 4 years have gone by since then. You're talking about reforms you'd like to see. Where is the action in Congress? Voting to shut the government down, voting to repeal this bill 56 times, is not fixing it. That's why we have to change Congress. I've said from the beginning of this campaign I would not have voted for the bill. I don't support the employer mandate. I do support regionalizing the delivery of health care and not making it a federal priority. It should be a regional priority. We have the health care facilities here to address those issues regionally. We need more transparency in the system. The bill needs to address that, but we need to work on it. That means working more than 92 legislative days in a legislative session. That means working together across the aisle to do something. Repealing is not a solution. Working across the aisle is a solution. It's a big bill, and it needs work. It's an insurance bill, primarily. So, yes, covering pre-existing conditions is a good idea. We need to do it in a reasonable and responsible manner. But you have to work together to get that done.
Lee Terry, 30 seconds.
Well, I appreciate that. And the reality is, out of those 56, it was just 50 the other day. And I don't know where you're getting the 92 days. There's a heck of a lot more than that that we've been in session. But the reality is, out of those whatever 40 or 50 or 56 votes there's been, most of them have been to fix this. It's like the 30-hour rule that is creating a part-time economy. It's about how the employer mandates. It's about one of my bills to provide transparency. And we get a lot of Democrat votes on it, but for some reason, they're on Harry Reid's desk.
Brad Ashford.
You don't vote to shut the government down because you don't get your way. You don't get to take your ball and go home. You have to bring back to your constituents some solutions. There has been no change in the health care law since 2010. That has to change. It'll be a high priority of mine to do that.
There are so many things happening in the Middle East, Iraq, Iran, Syria, now ISIS. One of the big questions is whether the ISIS threat will force the U.S. to go back into that part of the world with boots on the ground, which President Obama says he won't do. What do you think we should be doing, Brad Ashford?
I have a significant disagreement with Lee on this issue. ISIS is a murder organization. To vote no to fund training the moderate Syrian forces at a time when we are trying to protect our borders and protect our soldiers in the Middle East, to deny them the funding that they need to train the moderate forces is not something I totally would disagree with, and I would have voted the other way. Secondarily, the vote was on a Friday. Then Congress went home. The longest period of time that Congress has been home to campaign since 1960. You know, we are engaged in military action in Iraq and Syria on these issues. We needed to be there for at least two or three more days to debate what authority the president should have.
Lee Terry?
Well, ISIS is a threat to the United States, and we have to deal with this. The plan that has been provided by DOD and the White House of using airstrikes, I agree with. I think that we can continue to train the Iraqi military. We can continue to train the Kurds. By the way, I've met with the Kurds when I was over in Baghdad a couple years ago. I'm really impressed with their entrepreneurship, their level of intelligence, and they're great fighters. So what we should do is exactly what we're doing, is focusing on those in Iraq and empowering them to take care of their own country. We're also working with their government. As you know, they've had a transition in government in Iraq. They're going to have a stronger leader that's going to be incorporating all of the sects within Iraq. And then it's them that should have the boots on the ground. I voted against arming the Free Syrian Army because we really don't know who they are. And the likelihood that we could be training our enemy of tomorrow is high. And I wasn't going to risk putting the United States military, our men and women in boots, in jeopardy.
Brad Ashford, 30-second rebuttal.
Votes have consequences. The effort to train moderate forces in Syria was a bipartisan effort. Over 300 members of Congress voted for it. We have to draw the line somewhere, Lee, and that was the first opportunity we had to draw the line. These are murderers. We should train these moderate forces. We should keep accountability in place, but that was not a vote that I would have made.
Lee Terry.
And I disagree with you on this one. We have had too many examples of people that we have trained that have turned their guns on us, and the American public is sick of that. I hear of that all of the time. And so let's use the military that exists there, and that's from the Iraqi government. And I believe Turkey should get more involved. They're already spilling over the border in Turkey right now. Let's use those people that is their homeland. Let's train them. Let's not train our enemies.
New question. Everybody seems to agree there is an income gap in this country. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. How would you approach this if you agree it's a problem? Is there or should there be a government role in solving it, Lee Terry?
There is a government role. It's limited and it's effective. We have to grow our economy and create jobs. If we're going to look at how we grow our economy, you have to look first at what buoys the middle class, and that's our manufacturing jobs. I'm frustrated that somehow there's an attitude out there that we can't compete with China on jobs. That's wrong. That's bull. We need to focus on bringing those jobs back to America. Those are good, high-paying jobs. Some of the things we have to do to make that happen is reform our tax code so we can be more competitive. We do that, we bring jobs home. But if we create those jobs here in the United States, we have to have the skilled workforce. What I'd love to see is take our folks that are working at a lower level, lower wages, help them step up. Let's make sure they get the right education, the skills that are necessary to take the $40,000, $50,000 job openings in our manufacturing today, and that's how we can lift people out of poverty. Now, there's a lot of other things we have to do, and that's still encouraging what makes America great, and that's the art of entrepreneurship. And the reality is that the rules and regulations on our job creators today is stifling, and that's one of the reasons Gallup polling is showing that there's more business shutdowns today than there are businesses being created. We've got to reverse that.
Brad Ashford for a minute 30.
Okay. We definitely need to provide job training across the board. I support vocational education in the schools and have offered legislation on that topic numerous times in the legislature. I support the minimum wage for the very reason that we need to have a skilled workforce. In order to be skilled, they have to be trained. Most Americans on the minimum wage are women, and many of them are single parents. They must have at least some basic wage in order to protect their security so they can be trained. People aren't trained overnight. They're trained over a period of months and years. So the federal government, the Congress, has failed to vote on the minimum wage for the first time in decades. So we need to have the minimum wage so that people can have job security or financial security so they can attain job security by getting the training they need, either in vocational education or at community colleges or with an employer. That helps employers because the job training will elevate those people to places where they can do welding jobs. They can do the kinds of jobs that are out there. But minimum wage since the 1930s has been a clear part of that policy.
Lee Terry for 30 seconds.
Well, I appreciate the mention of the importance of workforce development. And we passed a bill just recently in the House in a very bipartisan way that's still sitting over in the Senate that reformed workforce development so we train people. And, yes, there's an employer component for it. And I wish that my friend Brad's Senator Ashford would have done that for veterans in the legislature when he helped bottle up a bill that would have provided workforce development and skill development for our veterans.
Brad Ashford, 30-second rebuttal.
I support, certainly when it comes to veterans, I support job training for veterans. We've done it in the legislature. I will do it in the Congress. Those dollars need to go for job training, and that should be the priority. But, again, equal pay for equal work for women, the minimum wage, vocational education, all policies that I have been supportive of and advanced in the legislature and would support in Congress.
New question. Lee Terry, you have highlighted your efforts for veterans during your years in office. Brad Ashford, you have questioned Mr. Terry's sincerity relative to veterans. We want both of you to defend your positions, and Brad Ashford, you first.
We have a second-rate veterans hospital built in 1950. We have a plan, a plan from 2007 that has not been implemented. The cuts in the 2011, 2012, 2013 timeframe have consequences, Lee. The reason that we have gone down the list is because the money is not there to do the work. So now we have a deputy assistant undersecretary coming to Omaha to say we're going to look at different ideas on the Veterans Hospital. That's not a solution. After 16 years, that's not a solution. So what we need to do is we need to stop the sequestration, the cross-the-board cuts, because those cuts have consequences. And that's what the Congress has done. We need to be laser-like in how we budget. We need to go line by line by line. And if veterans are the priority, which I believe they are, over a million veterans now into the have been in Iraq and Afghanistan. We should have prioritized veterans when we were in those conflicts and not used each budget year as a crisis and not plan for them financially. That's the problem. Votes have consequences. And that's why the Veterans Hospital has not been modified. That's why we don't have a new VA. And that's why we've gone down the list.
Lee Terry for a minute 30.
Wow. I can't. That's just absolutely false and fanciful. Now, let's look at the effort that I started and then teamed up with Ben Nelson to get a replacement hospital, because the 1947-built hospital is really the infrastructure's decaying. It was a teamwork, and in about 2010, we got the VA to agree that we need a new facility. Unfortunately, since then, and by the way, Brad, do your research. Veterans wasn't sequestered. That wasn't part of sequestration. So what they need, they tried to get back into hospital building. They did a poor job of it. They haven't gotten down to number 5 on the list in 4 years. It's going to be a long time. And I'm showing leadership because we can't wait for the VA when they're almost spending 100% more than they budget on each hospital, the 4 that they're building. And so we wanted to put some options on the table. Our entire delegation met with it. Our community has been kind enough to put some options on the table. But I'm also proud not only of my efforts for the VA hospital, but my efforts in getting a national cemetery here. That was all my initiative. And, yes, I got help from Ben Nelson. And also the homeless shelter, when the VA wasn't going to do anything about homeless veterans, I'm the one that got a group of developers together. And then that brought the VA back in, but that was, again, my initiative. I'll stand on my record supporting veterans.
Brad Ashford, 30-second rebuttal.
Lee, you voted against vouchers in 2011. You voted against vouchers for homeless veterans in 2011. And you're telling us that the 28 beds or 30 beds that you have in the veterans' home is your initiative. That's fine. I'm for that. That's a good idea. But votes have consequences, and when you vote to cut something and then claim credit for it, that doesn't go together. And quite frankly, sequestration does apply to construction.
Lee Terry?
The reality here, Brad, is, and the people here, those bills that actually were the veterans' bills that did the real work, I supported. I voted for. He talks about these motions to recommit or their budget that had all of the tax increases in them, spent more, would have put us more in deficit spending. Yeah, I voted against those, but that was the totality. The veterans' bills, the real bills, I supported.
New question. Outside groups are running ads in this campaign. Would you push to limit campaign donations and overturn the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court, Lee Terry?
Well, the Supreme Court has made it pretty clear, and it's understandable that probably the highest level of protected speech is political speech, that we should have the right to voice our opinions about what principles you agree with. So I don't support turning that over, because I'm about free speech. I'll protect people's free speech. Now, I'll admit to you, I don't like fundraising. Brad, do you?
No. I agree
None
with
of
you
us.
On that.
Yeah, thanks. We do agree on
one
thing.
We're 100% in agreement.
And it is, for me, just something I don't like to do, is call people up for money. But the reality is we've got to pay for our TV ads. And the reality is groups that do have political positions should have the freedom under our First Amendment to voice their opinions as well.
Brett Asher?
Yes, I think Citizens United should eventually be overruled, or at least we should try to pass legislation that will ratchet it back. Non-disclosure of donations is anathema to me. The idea that someone can hide their donations behind some corporate fiction, to me, is not an American way to deal with democracy. I think it's going to destroy our democracy in the end, in my view. So non-disclosure of individuals who make donations, which Citizens United allows, is a problem. It's a huge problem. It's going to undermine our democracy. There's too much money in politics. Secondarily, I do support efforts in the Congress bills have been introduced that say individuals who make $250 contributions or donations to political campaigns or $500 donations or $50 donations, that they be allowed a credit on their income tax so that it can sort of even the playing field. That's something we can do under Citizens United. I support it. I would vote for it. It at least starts to even out. But non-disclosure is a bad deal. It's a bad deal for our citizens. It's a bad deal for America. It's a bad deal for democracy. And that's what Citizens United allows.
30 seconds, Lee Terry.
Yeah, freedom of speech is really a pillar of our democracy. And the reason why so many groups don't want to have to say that they've donated, let's look at Lois Lerner in the IRS. And there's a lot of people that are concerned that if their name is published and your president doesn't agree with that particular cause, that you will then come under government attack. It's happening, and it's happened, and that's a real fear that's out there.
Brad Ashford?
You ought to disclose. If you give money to a political campaign, you ought to disclose who you are. So that individuals will know where their support's coming from. I don't see any problem. I don't have any problem with that. And quite frankly, as far as the limits on spending, I get queasy about that for some of the First Amendment right kinds of considerations. But disclosure has to occur. Citizens United allows donations without disclosure. That's not democracy. It's a bad idea, and it's not the First Amendment, in my view.
New question. Brad Ashford, recently University of Nebraska-Lincoln scientists provided a report on climate change as it would affect Nebraska. How should Congress address the issue of climate change?
Well, first of all, they need to have a comprehensive bill on the environment. And again, Congress has not done that. So we don't have a clear idea of where the country's going on the environment. So we need comprehensive energy legislation. And we don't have it. We need to extend the credits for wind energy, which terminated a few years ago or last year. We need to extend those credits. I think we should do what we've done in the Nebraska legislature. We dealt with the pipeline issue by going into special session, passed a bill that moved the pipeline into much less dangerous areas off the aquifer, and we put in place a process for pipeline approval. And it wasn't just for TransCanada, but it was for all future pipelines. We in Nebraska, are not allowed to introduce or pass special legislation as you are in the Congress. We were able to put together a bill that dealt with landowner rights, dealt with environmental concerns, and we were also able to pass tax credit bills for wind energy. We've done that in Nebraska. We've got a ways to go. We've got a ways to go, but we've made a start. Congress does not want to vote on comprehensive anything, including energy.
Lee Terry for a minute 30.
There is a national policy proposed by our president. It was called cap and trade. The House of Representatives rammed it through our committee and rammed it to the floor without any Republican involvement in that policy. I even asked for a simple amendment regarding transmission of electricity from wind turbines in Nebraska to the cities. And Henry Waxman, the chairman of that committee, said, are you going to support cap and trade? And I said, no. He goes, then you don't get an amendment. That's how it worked. So that's their policy. And so my policy is one of all of the above. I embrace renewable fuels. We need to have diversity in our portfolio of whether it's generating electricity or in our transportation. But we have to recognize that energy is a cornerstone of our economy. It's a real advantage to the United States that we have affordable and reliable energy. So when we develop our policies, keep in mind that that makes us more competitive in a global environment when we're trying to get the jobs back. Now, the rules and regulations in lieu of legislation called cap and trade, like the new proposed rules on current electrical generation, where you basically set the limits for emissions under what coal can be under today's technology, is not the right path to do. We need to do what we have, is get together Republicans and Democrats. Let's come up with the all of the above solutions for both transportation fuels and generating electricity, and we will lower our emissions.
Brad Ashford for 30 seconds.
Yes, you have to bring together Republicans and Democrats. That's not what happens. That's not what happens in our Congress today. So rules and regulations occur because a legislative body doesn't act. I'm sorry what Henry Waxman said. Well, go find somebody else other than Henry Waxman and see if you can work out some kind of a compromise. This is way too partisan. We need to have a congressional debate on energy and not a regulatory scheme.
Lee Terry for 30.
You know, I actually had a Democrat co-sponsor on that. And, Brad, I've got a track record of working with the other side. In fact, one of the people that came from Chicago to support you, my ranking member on my subcommittee, who is one of the most liberal partisan people, we were able to work together and came and had a bill that forced the Department of Commerce to identify the barriers to foreign investment in the United States because we both wanted to make sure that we were creating jobs.
New question. Lee Terry, what would you do to address the public health issue of gun violence in the United States?
The public health issue, we have to recognize the kind of the bare base of what's occurring. If you dissect all of the gun shootings, the mass murders, whether it's been with knives or guns, there's been one common denominator, and that's mental health. We have people, young people, older people, that have not received the appropriate treatment for their mental health diseases. I am a co-sponsor of a bill that's in the House today. A friend of mine, Dr. Tim Murphy, who is a licensed psychologist, wrote that bill. I was one of his first co-sponsors. But it recognizes that we have to have an early intervention with people with mental health that are showing signs that they could become dangerous. It also then talks about the type of help and the continuum that they're going to need, including the involvement of not only social workers and professional doctors, but their families have to be involved in this too. And so we got to make sure that we're reimbursing the physicians that are involved in this process to help them get better, to train the parents to know what they need to look for. And, yes, there's going to be times where we're going to have to figure out a way to make sure that when they're diagnosed and they're prescribed medications, that there is oversight of their taking that medication. And right now there's very few states that'll even have some type of supervision.
Brad Ashford for a minute 30.
A vote to repeal the ACA is a vote to repeal parity in mental health treatment. We finally got to the point in our health care system where mental health was raised to the level of physical health. I support and passed in Nebraska a law in 1991 that's still the law today for universal background checks to make sure that every person who purchases a handgun has a mental health check so that if they have mental health issues, that there can be at least a time when that person would have to justify why they should have a handgun. Mental health is a critical issue. Universal background checks at gun shows in gun stores in this state has been the law since 1991. On no occasion has anybody from the NRA or any other place introduced a bill to limit that. So I don't know where you are in universal background checks, Lee, but it seems to me that background checks for a purchase of handguns ought to include mental health checks.
Lee Terry for 30 seconds.
Well, Brad, I don't, you say some of the things that just baffle me when you say something like repealing the ACA repeals mental health care. That's just not true. Several years ago, Congress voted on to put mental health and physical health on parity. I was a co-sponsor of that bill. I supported it. And regardless of repealing the ACA, it's going to still be there.
Brad Ashford, 30-second rebuttal.
You have to have the resources, Lee, in order to provide mental health. If you talk to mental health providers, there are only 31 juvenile mental health physicians in this state. Mm-hmm. So you got to have capacity, and people have to get paid to provide the mental health services. That's what ACA does. That part of it does. So you can have parity, but if you can't reimburse the physicians, you're not going to get the care. So that's a part of the ACA that I do support and should not be repealed, in my view.
New question. What role should the federal government have, if any, in formulating the curriculum of public schools, Brad Ashford?
I think it ought to be done on the state level. And in Nebraska, I served on the Education Committee when we passed a bill that set criteria for state standards. I think that's how it should be done. I think the federal government ought to, where appropriate. Certainly in vocational education, I support enhanced funding for vocational education for 9th and 10th graders in our schools. But I think the testing regimen ought to be state developed. And in my view, the federal government has tied much too tight a noose around departments of education and legislators and governors on the state level. And we should be allowed to do that. We've done it in Nebraska successfully. We're seeing an increase in school attendance. We're seeing an increase in test scores. And I think that this underlying testing developed in Nebraska is the appropriate way to do it.
Lee Terry for a minute 30.
Bluntly stated, the federal government should have no say in educational curriculum. That is a state and local issue. I passionately believe that the best education is where the parents are involved deeply and the teachers have feedback. The teachers are a key. So when you team up parental involvement with great teachers, good principals, and a solid superintendent, you have a great school district. And you have an atmosphere where people will learn. If you move these type of educational decisions of what textbooks and what curriculum will be done in the classroom, what you're doing is removing the parents from part of the process. You're removing the teachers from part of the process. You're even removing the state legislatures and the State Board of Education. That is absolutely the wrong way to go. Absolutely. And I really believe why so many of our schools are struggling today is because if you look and ask the superintendents and look into how much time each school district is using to comply to the already existing federal mandates on them and the paperwork that's necessary, they're burning millions of dollars probably in Omaha, Nebraska, that would be better used to pay our teachers, have better technology in our classrooms. It's just a better way to keep it local.
I think we might have agreement on this, but Brad Ashford, you got 30 seconds anyway.
No, I agree. I don't think our schools are doing that poorly. Actually, I think we're making significant improvements in education. Certainly in attendance and in test scores are showing incremental improvement. At OPS particularly, we're seeing some nice improvements. So we ought to keep the testing regimen local. We ought to keep the state legislature, Department of Education, and the local school districts working together on developing the best kind of testing and standards.
Lee Terry, 30 on this?
Again, it's just about keeping it local. And I will say one thing, that an experience that we've seen as parents is that many times, even though the curriculum is done local, the schools only have one source to get the school books. I think that's something that our State Board of Education and our state legislature should look at, is making sure that there's alternative textbooks, so that the textbooks today are being written to Common Core. So the reality is, if these school districts are buying the textbooks that are forming Common Core, we're going to get it whether we like it or not.
New question. Lee Terry, 40 million American college students are burdened by student debt amounting to $1.2 trillion. What policies or programs would you propose to assist young professionals in reducing this debt?
Well, there's no doubt that this debt is strangling the young people that are trying to set themselves on a course to be successful. We need to think about this. I'm proud that I put myself through college. My wife is proud that she put herself through college. I did it by working several jobs and student loans. I was lucky enough when we got married that Robin had some of her student loans left. So I know about paying back our student loans and what a burden that can be. I worry, though, out loud that it seems like every time Congress increases the level of Pell Grants and increases the amount that students can take out, instantaneously the universities bump up their tuition, and so no students are actually gaining anything. And so we have to really think about, yes, we want student loans, but I think the student loan program being nationalized within the ACA was a bad step, because now you have to come to Congress to get any type of relief. You need to come to Congress to set your interest rates, and so now it's just politicized. I think if we would have left it in the private sector with the loan guarantees like it had been, where the lenders will have a level of security, that then creates a level of competition to keep the interest rates low, not just government set, and that's the way that we can help our students get a college education.
Brad Ashford, a minute 30.
Unfortunately, the train has left the station on this issue, and I support efforts to allow students to renegotiate their student loans at current rates. Right now, students, young people, are paying more for their student loans than the mortgages, and I will support initiatives in the Congress if one gets there to allow students to renegotiate their debt. The other thing is the minimum wage. Today, what happens to students is that they have a debt, then they don't get their first job at $50,000. I know, Lee, that's an ideal, but they don't get $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 jobs right off the bat, but they still have to pay their student loans. Mm-hmm. The minimum wage is an important ingredient. That's why it has been increased since from 25 cents in the 1930s to what it is at $7.25 today, but it should have been incrementally increased by Congress, but Congress failed to act. So it's the students, it's the interns that have the debt without the means to pay it. So one, renegotiate student debt at market rates, and that means everybody, not just those who graduated in the last year or 2 years or 3 years, and number two, so that they can raise their families, and number two, we need to increase the minimum wage.
Lee Terry,
Brad, you'll be pleased to know that they do have the right to renegotiate and bundle. It's one of the federal programs that's out there now. Also, the best way to help college grads is to make sure that we have an economy that's growing and we have the jobs that are available for them. So let's focus on the right tools to make sure that they have those good-paying jobs and not working minimum wage, whether it's $7.25 or $9.
Brad Ashford?
$9 minimum wage is, as you, I think, rightly referred to it, it's a step-up wage. You have a job, you get trained, you're paid minimum wage, and then you go to the next level, and then you go to the next level, and then you go to the next level. That's the way it's worked in this country since the 1930s. Mm-hmm. It's good for this country to allow people the opportunity to work and to be trained, and the minimum wage is an important part of that.
Next question. This goes to you, Mr. Ashford. The Nebraska legislature currently has term limits. Should members of Congress also be limited in the number of terms members can serve?
I just can't wait. Lee, what do you want to go for? Now, anyway, 16 years, I think, is the... Now, look, I think... When I was in the legislature, I supported a 12-year term limit bill, and I would support that in Congress. I think that's wise policy. I'd love to see a nonpartisan House and a partisan Senate. I'm not going to see that, but I would. I like the idea of a 12-year term limits in the House. I think 8 years is too short. Certainly in the legislature, 8 years, you're not really able to learn the many new things that you have to learn to make policy in our state. So 8 years isn't quite enough. I've had so many colleagues that started out in the legislature with very little knowledge about a topic, and then when they leave, they're experts. And I see that all the time in healthcare and so many issues. So I think 12 years is appropriate. I think the turnover is good. I left the legislature after 8 years and went into the private sector, and then I came back, and it helped. So,
Lee Terry for a minute 30.
Well, some of you may remember, because I hear it once in a while, that when I first ran, very naively signed or said that I would serve only six terms. And then when I got to, or 6 years, three terms. And when I got to Congress, I was immediately dubbed with my colleagues as the lame duck caucus. When I went and asked for my committee assignments, they said, no, we're going to put you on the lowest level committees because, frankly, it takes a lot more than 6 years to get to know these intricate details of the issue. So we're not going to put you on a significant committee. It is a seniority-based system, and so you have to work and earn your spurs and really learn the issues, of which I've been able to do in both telecommunications as well as energy and some level of tax policy and on manufacturing. So I've learned those to a level where I can actually now talk to the highest level of experts, and this is a key part. And to the bureaucrats, if you don't have the knowledge, you can't walk into the EPA on an energy issue and have a conversation with them about why their proposed rule is right or wrong. So a term limit would actually empower the executive branch more and their bureaucracy.
Brett Ashford for 30 seconds.
I agree that the reason that regulatory agencies run amok is because elected officials aren't providing the debate on the issue. And I think that is true of all legislative bodies. We need to do a much better job of debating the tough issues. And it is true that it does take a while to learn issues and learn policy options. But I do still think that term limits with a reasonable number of years is a good idea because turnover is important as well.
Lee Terry?
Well, one of the ways that we can restrain the bureaucracy is the RAINS Act. The RAINS Act is an important bill that I supported that would keep in check the bureaucracy. Right now, like the EPA can push out a bill or a rule that has a $1 trillion impact on the economy without any government oversight, except our committee has done a dozen hearings and had many debates over it, Brad. But they still do it. This would then force a vote in Congress on any rule or regulation that has an impact of over $100 million. That's a check and balance that's absolutely needed.
Last question, and then we will go to final statements. Immigration policy. How, Lee Terry, would you change immigration policy?
Well, I do agree that our immigration policy needs a lot of work in all of its facets. Frankly, I've met with legal citizens that have come here and they want to bring their family over, and their family has filed their paperwork 10 or 14 years even. So we have to recognize that it needs to be fixed. And reality is there's a lot of agreement between, at least on principles, on what we should be doing to reform immigration and securing our borders and our visa entries, and there's lots of agreement between Republicans and Democrats, the House and the Senate. The problem here, though, is that we are being held hostage because it doesn't have a pathway to citizenship. That's the one thing that's stopping the bills from progressing. So that's the one that creates a lot of controversy, a lot of differences of opinion. And so why don't we take that area that we know, like securing our borders, E-Verify, guest worker, all of the reforms and pass that, then why don't we get a bipartisan group together, House and Senate, and figure out what the best path is. If it's not a pathway to citizenship, I don't support a pathway to citizenship. But I'll be open to other levels, and working with the people that are already here in our Dreamers.
Brett Ashford?
I'm in. It's been 10 years since there's been a real debate on the floor of the United States Congress, certainly of the House, on immigration. There has not been a debate. So I'm in. Take the six parts that you want to debate. Let's get them on the floor. Let's debate them. And let's decide what legal status means. If it doesn't mean pathway to citizenship for adults, does it mean pathway to citizenship for children? I personally think, and that's my highest priority, those little ones who've come here as babies and who know no other country and have gone to school in our public schools and are going to be part of our future, they need to have a pathway to citizenship. The nonpartisan bill in the Senate does have a pathway to citizenship in it. It does have a pathway to citizenship that defines the legal status of various groups. And it talks about getting to the back of the line. It talks about not violating any of our laws. It talks about having jobs and then qualifying. So I'll take you up on it. Let's take six parts. Let's put them on the House floor and let's debate them. Let's have a free debate. And I agree, Democrats and Republicans are both at fault on all these issues. But we don't vote on any important issues in the Congress. It isn't like Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan in 1986. It's not like the 1990 Andrews Air Force Base budget deal. We don't do that anymore. We don't vote.
Lee Terry, 30 seconds.
Well, I'm proud of the House record. We've passed over 600 bills, almost 700. Senate has passed 100. And most of the 90 of those have been non-controversial. Senator Ashford, 16-year Senator Ashford, you mentioned the other day about an energy efficiency bill that passed the House nearly unanimously, but Harry Reid would not bring it up. And when Harry Reid says that he's going to hold all the any bills on immigration hostage until we agree to citizenship, that is the real problem here.
Brad Ashford? For
Yeah, I don't agree with Harry Reid holding any bill up. But the reason that that bill did not get a vote was because the pipeline was tied to it. So it made a bill that would have helped every homeowner in this congressional district become more energy efficient and to defray some of the costs that the sewer separation project is burdening on our city. So I'll tell you what, let's have a vote on energy efficiency. Harry Reid shouldn't do that, but none of them should. That's the problem. We need a new way in Congress.
Time for two-minute closing statements, and Lee Terry, you are first.
Thank you. Well, this election is about leadership, and there's lots of differences between me and my opponent. First of all, in trying to secure our country, we disagree on how to even secure our community. He has a long history of supporting reducing sentences for violent criminals. He refused to take up the bills necessary to reform good time so that you actually had to earn your good time instead of automatically getting it, which is the current law. And by the way, basic civics, it takes a law to change a law. So the legislature needed to be involved in this. The Adam Walsh one is severely disturbing to me, that he criticized the Adam Walsh bill as just being a one-size-fits-all. It's not worth it. I think it's worth it to know where people who prey on children live. Now, he and I disagree on tax policy. He has raised taxes 12 times in the legislature in the last 4 years, both encouraging or impacting property taxes, authorizing more sales tax on a lot of different items. I have never voted for a tax increase, but I will vote for a tax reform bill that brings down the lower code, cleans out all of the underbrush of the specialized special interest tax breaks, and makes us more competitive. I believe that we need to have a workforce development that really teaches the skills necessary that people can walk into good-paying jobs. That's the real step up. Now, rules and regulations matter as well. It's stifling the creation of small business in the United States. Last, we really have a problem with our national debt. I've taken tough votes that I'm getting criticized on for a budget that has a soft landing to a balanced budget within 10 years. Those are tough votes, and we need to make that if we're going to secure our future.
Brad Ashford, your closing statement. 2 minutes.
Very briefly, the Department of Corrections has violated state law. They violated the good time law that we have had in place since the 1990s. The Adam Walsh Act, we have one of the strongest Adam Walsh Acts in the country, protecting children and putting predators on the registry. And we have expanded sentences going back to 1989 when we created minimum mandatory sentencing for drug crimes and violent crimes. 2009, we unanimously implemented a law on gun crimes and gang crimes. I think the World Herald had it right. I have an excellent record on public safety. But the Department of Corrections has violated the law, now to the point where the governor has been subpoenaed because he could not run his agency, he could not run his department. And certainly the department has made many, many mistakes. But let me say this. Let me get to the point. The point is, what are we going to do in Congress? What are we going to do in Congress, and what changes are going to be made? And I'll tell you this. Congress is terribly, terribly broken. They don't stay in Washington. The members don't build relationships. They don't pass bills. They don't pass a budget that's real. They pass sequestration. They don't, decisions have repercussions, and votes have repercussions. When you don't adequately fund what you should be funding and you sequester the budget, you're going to have repercussions from that. I will never vote to shut the government down. I will never do that. I will never take pay if someone else shuts the government down. And I will go to Congress and I will find 25 friends and we will break the gridlock and we will make this country proud of its Congress again so that the hopefully 11% will not be the approval rating of the United States Congress. I respectfully request your vote, and thank you all for this event, and thank you for coming.
That concludes our debate. Our thanks to KIOS Public Radio, to Cox Communications, and the League of Women Voters, and especially to our candidates for their willingness to come forward in a public setting to debate the issues.
Thank you, Brad. Well done.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a debate between the two candidates for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District. The participants were incumbent Republican Lee Terry, seeking his 9th term in Congress, and his Democrat challenger, Nebraska State Senator Brad Ashford. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha and Cox Communications, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 16, 2014, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, November 20th at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a discussion of the so-called Affordable Health Care Act, or Obamacare, 4.5 years later. The panelists will be Tom Gilsdorf, Director of Individual Healthcare Solutions with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska, and Sean McGuire, founder of E.D. Bellis Healthcare Consulting, an organization in Omaha that helps businesses and individuals prepare for requirements created by current government policies. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Be sure and listen this Thursday, October 30th at 12 noon, for the second in our series of three debates with the candidates for the three major offices in the upcoming election. We'll hear a debate between the candidates for United States Senate from Nebraska, Republican Ben Sass, Democrat Dave Domina, and independent candidates Todd Watson and Jim Jenkins. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.